On a December night in 1984, a methyl isocyanate gas leak occurred in a pesticide plant in Bhopal, India. The plant was a subsidiary of U.S.-owned Union Carbide, now part of Dow Chemical. 42 tons of methyl isocyanate gas, MIC, was released into the air, which drifted across the city, upwards of 1 million people. 3,000 to 4,000 people died almost immediately, most of them from pulmonary edema. But the bigger tragedy was to come in the following years. Hundreds of thousands of multiple generations of victims have been condemned to lives of prolonged pain, chromosomal abnormalities, neurological disease, cancer, blindness, stillbirths, miscarriages, and lung and heart disease. Within 4 days of the leak, a legal battle began between Union Carbide, the U.S. government, the Indian government, and victims of the disaster. Ultimately, Union Carbide accepted some responsibility for the accident and agreed to a settlement of $470 million to be paid to the Indian government. However, this meant that the Indian government was allowed to distribute the funds to claimants at their discretion. To date, reports suggest that families of those who perished have received an average of $2,000, a paltry sum. And even worse, those suffering from severe disease have only received an average settlement of $500 per person. No one from Union Carbide was ever tried for the lack of safety protocols that led to the leak. And unbelievably, no cleanup operation of the chemical waste site has ever been conducted. The pond where Union Carbide used to dump the chemicals sits untouched, with children running about not far away. According to the Bhopal Medical Appeal, an organization that rehabilitates survivors and provides medical help, toxic waste from the factory site continues to leach into soil and groundwater. Therefore, there are two components to understanding the continuing impact of the disaster: the generations of children born after the disaster and the effects of the toxic water that continues to be consumed to this day. Importantly, almost 40 years later, it remains the world's worst industrial disaster. So what happened? An improperly trained employee introduced water into one of the three MIC tanks, seen here in the middle of this drawing, causing pressure and heat inside the tank to build, leading to the leak. A vent gas scrubber, depicted on the upper left, should have been able to neutralize the harmful gas leak, but it was turned off that night. A flare tower on the right had been designed to burn off excess MIC vapor, but it was under maintenance that evening. A large water spray could have been able to stop the lethal gas from just drifting over the city, but the water didn't reach high enough. And the refrigeration system on the lower right had been shut down 6 months earlier due to budget constraints. Unbelievably, none of the four safety systems designed to contain a leak were operational that night. And thus, a dense lethal cloud drifted over the city of Bhopal, exposing hundreds of thousands people to deadly MIC gas. So why did this occur in a company owned by what was at the time an Indian subsidiary of U.S. chemical giant Union Carbide? Union Carbide tried to shift blame to UCIL, but in fact, Union Carbide's engineers oversaw the design, building, and safety operations of the Bhopal factory until the end of 1982, when it became fully functional. After that, they were, in theory, supposed to provide ongoing technological support and safety reviews. However, Union Carbide did not install fully available measurement systems or even rudimentary computerized systems, which could have detected leaks early on. Instead, the eyes and ears of their Indian employees were the leak detectors. In addition, there were minimal gauges and indicators, and the few that existed often failed without being replaced. Even in 1984, at other similar-sized hazardous plants all over the world, computerized early warning systems sensed leaks and monitored rates and concentration levels. These systems were often linked to telephone systems to automatically dial out alerts. In Bhopal, there were no emergency planning measures, and local authorities knew nothing about the dangers of MIC. Now, let's compare this to one of the U.S.-based Union Carbide plants manufacturing pesticide using MIC in the 1980s, one of which was photographed in 1982 and depicted below. Their safety devices were automatically controlled through computer systems with manual backup devices. At Bhopal, they were all manual, meaning they were at the mercy of human error. At the U.S. plants, emergency planning involved all of the emergency services and public broadcast systems. A 30,000-gallon dump tank was kept empty and ready to receive any runoff MIC. There was also a sump system in place, which had the capacity to hold 42,000 gallons of runoff. The Bhopal plant had none of these precautionary safety measures. Now let's turn to the epidemiological aspects of exposure to methyl isocyanate, which can be divided into immediate effects, short-term effects, and long-term effects. Acute exposure to high vapor concentrations may cause severe pulmonary edema and injury to the alveolar walls of the lung, severe corneal damage, and ultimately death. As a tragic side note, MIC gas is heavier than air, so it drifts to the ground fairly quickly, which in the case in Bhopal meant it affected those of smaller stature, meaning many more children than adults. For those who didn't die, short-term effects for survivors included respiratory issues, ulcers, persistent abdominal pain, impaired audio and visual memory, impaired reasoning ability, and more. Long-term effects can be seen in these disturbing yet powerful images. They include, but are not limited to, severe deformities to those born to children and grandchildren of survivors, increased pregnancy loss, increased infant mortality, increased chromosomal abnormalities, and impaired vision, amongst other serious defects and chronic conditions. In 2013, The Lancet issued a report entitled, "Bhopal Study Represents Missed Opportunity," and that included the following statement. The Bhopal population is the largest natural laboratory of an accidental chemical release, and much could have been learned to benefit gas victims as well as future populations impacted by disasters. This now appears to be a lost opportunity. 1 year after the leak, the Indian Council of Medical Research, the ICMR, established the Bhopal Gas Disaster Research Center for the purpose of initiating a number of studies regarding Bhopal. While numerous studies were conducted within India, most were not peer-reviewed or released in a timely manner. The largest cohort study, the main topic of the Lancet report, lost 79% of its cohort within 3 years of data collection. What this ultimately means is that the exact long-term health impacts will never be known. Many moved away from Bhopal, and nothing is known about the health status of those survivors. For the world's worst industrial accident, the facts vary unbelievably. Even within the immediate aftermath, mortality rates range from just under 4,000, according to the Indian government, to more than 10,000, according to many other investigations. But the Lancet report does offer that acute and ongoing adverse health effects exist in those who are exposed. And it is widely acknowledged that the second and third generation of the survivors still residing in the area are battling a spectrum of disabilities on a scale not seen anywhere else in India. In addition to the problems mentioned earlier, cerebral palsy, muscular dystrophy, Down syndrome, attention deficit hyperactivity order, blindness, learning difficulties, and gross motor delay are rampant. Many of these young adults have multiple conditions. The Bhopal disaster was not managed well. In 1984, there was essentially no public health infrastructure in Bhopal. The water quality was bad, and in addition, was only available for 3 to 4 hours a day. The lack of a sewage system meant that human waste was dumped into a lake, which was also used for drinking water. While the city had 4 hospitals, they were consistently short-staffed and without enough beds. A response system for disasters such as this did not exist, so most people only learned of the event once they were already exposed to the MIC gas. The facility itself was not managed well. There was no command center and no plant manager on site when the event occurred, and Union Carbide was not involved until well after thousands had died. And almost immediately upon being informed, Union Carbide attempted to distance itself from the event, claiming the Indian subsidiary was at fault. Communication of the leak was not effective. There was no disaster preparedness plan, and as mentioned earlier, there were no computer systems in place. Instead, staff assumed workers would let them know if their eyes began to water, as that is a signal of an MIC leak. The plant alarm was sounded, but then quickly turned off, aligning with company protocol to avoid alarming the public to small leaks. Only the muted alarm for plant personnel continued, with the result being that no plant workers died that night as they all evacuated quickly. If a loud alarm had continued, it might have reached much of the community before the gas overtook them.